What's good? What's good? What's good, fans? This is your man Cam. I'm joined by Young Sam. Also got a special guest, Tamir Azzali of Clutch Points, also a Los Angeles Clippers credentialed member. So I want to talk to him about the Clippers and kind of about the return of the NBA. Tamir was a little doubtful when I talked to him a few months ago that there was going to be a season. So I want to know how he feels now about that. We can talk about how the Clippers roar into their scrimmage game. We got Mike Tyson, fans. We got Mike Tyson inked a return to the ring, so we're going to talk about that. The Washington team changed their name. The Washington football team. This is what everybody's been calling them already the last 5 years, right, Clevon?
And there's you in the forefront of that movement, no doubt, Cam.
And then there's a new team up in the Pacific Northwest. We got to get Clevon's feedback on the rise of the Kraken. As always, we're going to talk about this day in history. And then we got some AFC South predictions, get you guys ready for the NFL season. Shout out to everybody listening. However you're listening to us, whether it's iHeartRadio, Spotify, tuned in. Thank you guys for tuning in. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, however you're listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate it. And let's get going. It's July 23, week 98. As always, Cleveland, we started off with the with our numbers. So let's ask our special guest. When you think of the number 23, Tamir, who first come to your mind and who wore best?
Well, those are almost two different questions right there. I mean,
well, not really.
First
guy I think he's one of the second, actually.
First one that comes to mind for me is LeBron, because I grew up on LeBron James.
Goodness.
You know, I didn't have a chance to watch Michael Jordan. But I think that the greatest player to wear 23 is probably Jordan. I don't think it's close, but I grew up on LeBron, so it's got to be LeBron for me.
LeBron is the first one comes to your mind, huh? Okay. I can think of a few more than that. Then, Cleveland, go ahead and co-sign that.
You know, Cam, for fear of my safety, I'm just going to say it the way Jordanites want me to say it. The first person comes to mind is Michael Jordan, and the person that wore it best is Michael Jordan. Yeah, I've been watching a 10-part docuseries called The Last Dance, and saw the way Mr. Jordan was swinging around a bat for one of his former teammates, even having the gall to have anything to say to him. So the way my cell phone is echoing, I'm not sure if the Jordanites are listening, but Michael Jordan wore it best, and he's the first person that comes to mind, Cam.
Y'all got to understand, I'm a youngin'. I didn't grow up on Jordan. So first one
right.
It's LeBron.
he would have said LeBron. I mean, I think we actually had this debate, too, Tamir. But I can come up with a few different names. Calvin Murphy, Marcus Trufant, and even the kid who ran out of Rainier Beach with his jersey flying in the rafters down there. Seattle, Washington, that'd be Jamal Crawford. Who you got for number 98, Mr. Cleveland?
You know, the first person that comes to mind is Big Sam Adams, fearsome defensive lineman for the Seahawks.
Yeah, that's a short list there. Come here. You got anybody who wore number 98 that you can think of?
I can't name a number 98. That's I got to think about that one for real.
No, well, don't think too hard, man. Sam Adams is about the only one who did that pretty well.
So I'll go with him then.
Tamir, give me your feedback, man. I want to know about Beverly and Harold. Now we understand, and we're talking about the Clippers losing their two kind of heart and soul guys, kind of glue guys, if you will. They both of them play with a lot of energy, bring a lot of energy to the team. Mm-hmm. Without the fans being in the arena, I think that heightens their impact to the game. What are your thoughts on that? And kind of, do you expect them to come back anytime soon? What's your thoughts on this?
I think you would expect them to come back sometime soon. I mean, if you guys have been paying attention to Instagram, Montrezl Harrell's grandmother is dealing with what appears to be some kind of illness or something. She doesn't appear to be well. Trez has been posting some pretty heartbreaking, you know, posts about how he's trying to cope with it and all that. So, you know, prayers up for Montrezl Harrell. He's dealing with some family issues as well. And then on Patrick Beverly's side, you know, he posted today on Instagram his friend, a good friend of his, I think he called him Bro, passed away. So it's a rest in peace. So prayers up to Pat Bev and his family and friends. Everyone's going through difficult times. This is just showing you that, you know, while we've all been waiting for basketball, this is not the number one thing in the world right now. So people are still dealing with stuff. They're still going through stuff. But on a more positive note in terms of their impact, I mean, look, you can't replace either of those two. We saw in the first scrimmage game for the Clippers the other day when the second unit came in, they were missing Montrezl Harrell. It was all Lou Williams, and it was a bunch of a little bit of Amir Coffey, some Rodney Magruder, and guys just trying to, you know, get points where they can find him. So the Clippers certainly missed Montrezl Harrell in the second unit. Patrick Beverley, I don't think you need me to tell you what he does. This guy's an energy guy. He's the guy you love to have on your team, and you absolutely despise to go against. He's just a nuisance. And I think especially in an environment like this where there's no fans, Patrick Beverley is going to be loud, and you're probably going to hear him from the TV set. Like today, I remember watching Carmelo Anthony. You know, he says, "Get the F out of here. I got this rebound." You can hear that loud and clear on TV. Right. I'm anticipating a lot of Patrick Beverley on my TV set.
You think you're going to have a talk show after this, huh?
Oh, man. They might have to blur some of what he says out.
So, Cleveland, now we talked last week about the Lakers. I mean, we talked to Alexi Warren about the Lakers not having Avery Bradley and their other guard going down, Rondo with the broken hand. Now, what's your thoughts on Beverley and Harold, and do you agree with Tomer as their impact on the Clipper squad?
Oh, I definitely think that it will have a significant impact. You know, they're emotional leaders, you know, great energy guys, inspirations, and kind of give the team their identity, you know, defensively especially. So, you know, those are big losses. I don't think that it is significant as the loss of your starting backcourt. And I think with the Clippers having the NBA Finals MVP from last year, one of the best two guards in the league as well, I think that they should be considered the front runners to win the Western Conference. If the Los Angeles Lakers were to somehow
oh my goodness,
overcome the losses that they've had to the starting backcourt, then you know, that would be somewhat miraculous. But right now, it's got to be the Clippers as the clear favorites to win the Western Conference.
The clear favorites are. This is coming from a Lakers fan, so man, just want you to know that he's trying to put all doubt.
Really?
He's trying to reverse jinx it,
huh?
He's trying to pad the books right there.
No reverse jinx here. I'm just saying, you know, given the set of circumstances that we're in, losing the starting backcourt adversely losing Patrick Beverley and Montrezl Harrell, I feel like losing your starting backcourt is a little bit more of a significant loss. And given the two losses, I would put the Los Angeles Clippers as the odds-on favorite to win the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I don't think anybody's buying that one. I don't think anybody's buying that one there. Tamir, what's your thoughts on the atmosphere now? You talked about the voices being able to be heard over the background. Do you think the Black Lives Matter on the floor, what's your thoughts on that? Is that going a bit too far? Is that doing enough? So obviously, some of the players don't think that. I was interested to hear Paul George's response in his press conference yesterday. That kind of warmed my heart. You have to agree with that, hearing what he said. But what do you think about the atmosphere, the attention to social justice that the NBA players are having, that the NBA itself are having? You know, share your thoughts on that.
I mean, I'm not going to bash the NBA because they did do a lot in terms of, obviously, the jersey messages, the messages on the court. I think we're also expecting some messages between games and timeouts to be aired on TV. I am a little disappointed because I thought they would give a lot more freedom to players to pick what they wanted in their jersey.
Yeah.
They kind of limited it. But at the same time, I understand why you can't just let them run wild in terms of what they can have on their jersey, because you would need some kind of control over it. At the same time, though, yeah, I do think they did a good job. Obviously, they're letting players speak their minds. We saw LeBron James after the game today. He spoke for 13 minutes. It was all about Breonna Taylor and getting justice for her and for those who don't have a voice. Yes, Tobias Harris, Paul George the other day. You were with us on that. Jeremy Grant, CJ McCollum. I just so many players that we've seen that are just have been outspoken, and it's good to see. It's good to see. It's necessary. You know, part of me is going. You know, we do have a job as reporters to get answers and do our jobs writing about the game, but this is a bit of a different time where we really need to focus in and on social injustice because it's just. For me personally, I mean, I can only imagine what it's like, you know, to be pulled over and have to worry about shit like that. And just we see this every single day. So the point where we need videos just to prosecute officers, just to go after them. Believing them is not enough. You have to have videos. So I love what the NBA is doing. I love what the NBA players are doing. I hope it continues. I hope it doesn't die down. I really hope this just goes on for the entirety of the NBA. Because this is not a fight that's going to end anytime soon.
Great point, and I appreciate the fact that you want to continue that message. Now, let me ask you a question on the other side, flip side of things. When is enough that is enough, or is there ever enough? Maybe Cleveland, you can answer that.
So I think that the partnership between the players and ownership in the NBA is quite unique. In comparison to the other sports. So I think that they have actually a little bit more of a voice and more opportunity to be individually expressive and kind of push their initiatives a little bit more. But at the same time, you know, it is still a business. There are still sponsors. There are still other factors involved with this. And I think that the NBA does the best that they can given the situation that they're in. And, you know, this was not created by them. At the same time, they are trying to be sensitive and reactionary to it. So I think that they're kind of in a tough situation, but I honestly think that they're doing the best that they can.
I think in regards to the sponsorship question that you raised, I think the sponsors kind of understand what they're getting into and who they're partnering with and what they expect. And whether they're completely 100% genuine or not, they're kind of going to ride the wave, as we've seen many companies do, spouting all Black Lives Matter this with their tweets and their Instagram posts or what have you. I think they're kind of going to ride the wave there. So I'm interested to I'd be interested to see now, and some of my questioning will be, okay, guys, the talk is great. What actionable steps do we have in place? Like, what are they doing actually, other than just talking? And because their voice is so big and so loud that when they say they want to implement something, we should see sponsors, shoe companies implement some strategies kind of almost instantly to kind of back what the players are saying. What's your thoughts on that, Tomer?
In terms of what specific thing?
I'm sorry?
In terms of what specific thing? I just.
With the players in regards to the social justice initiatives and the social justice communication that's been going on, it's great that they do have the focus and the awareness to talk about it. But I would like to know what are some of the action items? What are they going to do about it? Because as I mentioned, their voices are so loud and so powerful that when they say, okay, let's do this, I think most any sponsors should be jumping in with 2 feet to kind of implement some strategies, to implement some activities kind of almost instantly. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, look, we know that obviously these players, like you said, their words hold a whole lot of weight, especially when LeBron James speaks. The entire world is listening to that. We've seen Dwight Howard say that he's going to be donating the remainder of his check, of his salary from the Orlando return to his foundation that fights social injustice. I believe it was Patty Mills who's also going to be donating the rest of his salary. We've seen guys like Malcolm Brogdon and their foundations just continue to bring light and then do work in their community as well. Now, Kawhi Leonard said it best when he spoke to us last week. What the message is going to be on his jersey. And he said, it really doesn't matter what the message on the jersey is. As long as it matters what you're doing, what you're actually doing, what you're doing in the community, what you're doing to educate people, to donate, to, you know, help people and educate people. And so I think from that perspective, like, look, not everyone's going to go into detail of what they're doing. Some people may not be comfortable with it. But I think there's a large amount of players who are not only doing stuff, but if they're not doing that yet, they're educating themselves on what they can do to better their communities and bring more light to issues we have.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. You got anything to add to that, Cleavon?
Yeah, Kim, I was actually thinking about why the two of you were going back and forth, and it's a very fair question, but a very difficult answer. Question is, you know, how are these funds going to be allocated, if there are even funds that are going to be, well, you had mentioned, you know, Dwight Howard and a few other players that were going to do that, Patty Mills, but how are they going to be allocated, and what type of initiatives are there in plan to kind of see this thing through? And so I think that there's kind of a mixed message and not a very clear path, but the desire and the intent is there. So I just think it needs to be a little bit more focused with regards to how that gets done.
Yeah, and Tomer makes an excellent point. A lot of players may not be as comfortable as talking about what they're doing and what plans they have to going on. And so maybe they're not as comfortable or the right. That's not their lane, as Lou Williams said the other day. He kind of sticks to his lane. He didn't want to go out there and protest physically. He felt donating money would probably be the best way he can add some assistance to that. So it is a tricky question, but I think it's one that deserves answers.
I also think that, you know, we're in an age of this weird cancel culture where everyone's quick to cancel people, to criticize people, and and so I think players and their managers see that, and they say, you know, let's get you really educated on what you can do, what you can't do, what you can say, what you can't say, and then move from there. And I think that, you know, like I said, this is unprecedented times, both with the pandemic and with social injustice. So I think that a lot of people are really just getting educated on this and learning how they can really cause change and help their communities.
So, Tamir, I don't think we were at this point last time we spoke. Last time we talked, we were just wondering kind of, will we see basketball again at this before the end of the year? Will they finish the season? Was our last conversation. So let me ask you this question. This is something you've probably heard me ask a couple guys this already. Why do you think this situation, the murder of George Floyd, captured the world as it has? Since unlike Breonna Taylor, unlike Tamir Rice, unlike Trayvon Martin, I mean, those are cases, unlike Michael Brown, those, you know, there was rioting in St. Louis for a day or two. Florida, they were rioting after Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin. But it didn't last 3 or 4 weeks. It didn't, the world wasn't protesting like it has this one. Why do you think that is the case, Tamir?
I think it was because of the sheer lack of empathy, the lack, the violence, the just lack of care for another human's life caught on video. I think a lot of the ones you mentioned weren't caught on video. I think Eric Gardner was, but just the complete lack of empathy for this guy screaming to, I think he was yelling for his mom. I think that he's yelling to his mama who passed away. It just tore your heart out. Really, I couldn't finish watching the entire video. Maybe I should have, but it was just too tough to watch because there's no care for human life, and it's like I think people have simply had enough. You combine the reasoning that he was killed for some $20 bill that I don't know. It was just, he was unarmed. Yeah. There was no reason for it, and the fact that it was caught on video with three people behind him already, or two people behind him already on his I think it was on his ribs and on his legs.
And you had one guy looking out, one other officer looking out while people were filming. Yeah, it was pretty sickening. It was pretty sickening.
It was just sickening. There was no empathy in that, and you just. That's the line right there, I feel like. It should have been a while ago, but again, we're lucky we had this on video, because if this wasn't on video, who knows where we'd be right now.
I mean, but we had Rodney King on video. That was that happened in 92. I mean, that was told us it was that 30 years ago that police brutality happened. Like, it was we knew before then, but, I mean, that was clearly on video. And then they had the nerve to kind of let these cops go. Like, I mean, so it's video.
Well, social media is a very powerful weapon nowadays, though.
It's true.
Really helped spread everything crazy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who can, like I said, this is where cancel culture has kind of been okay, where we can really just go after people and I guess some of the officers who are not doing their jobs, or the chiefs who are the bosses of these people. I think that's where social media helps.
They can't hide. They can't
hide. Really helps
so
spread the word
a
lot. So
yeah, that's true. I appreciate the feedback on that. I'm a little off script there. Thank you for your feedback on that. Let me ask you your thoughts on, I think, Cleavon. Let me ask you this. Now, we understand that Avery Bradley is not going to be able to play. Rajon Rondo is not going to be able to play. But what do you think about the star player pressuring Caruso to miss his sister's wedding so he can support him on route to another championship? What do you think about that? What's your thoughts on that, Mr. Cleavon?
You know, Cam, during this time in our country's history, nobody is pressuring anyone to do anything. Perhaps they may be suggesting what may be the best course of action, given a certain set of circumstances. No one is pressuring anyone to do anything. Merely making suggestions and observations.
Suggestions and observations. What's your thoughts on that, Mr. Tomer? Do you hear this garbage coming out over here? Lakers fan coming.
I don't know about pressuring. I feel like, with all due respect, it's kind of common sense, at least from my perspective, not to be hosting a 100-plus person wedding in a coronavirus hotspot. You need that player to go attend a bubble where there are a bunch of NBA players filled. I think Caruso had common sense. I don't know if he was pressured there. I wouldn't be surprised if he was, but I think there was common sense there involved in saying, hey, I can't go to this wedding. I think another issue that should be addressed maybe another time is the fact that someone held a 100-person wedding in a hotspot for coronavirus.
Yeah, that was a good point there. I wasn't thinking of it from that angle. But I hope they sent Caruso's sister a nice wedding gift at least, since they wouldn't let his brother go to attend the wedding. I mean, they could have.
Well, of course, the Laker family is very appreciative. You know, they're very supportive. Of course, they send her something nice.
Okay, all right, Mr. Tomer. Before I get you off the line, I want to thank you for joining us once again. Let the people know your social media, where they can find you on social media, and how you're blowing up Twitter, Mr. Tomer. Have you got a blue check mark yet?
I don't have a blue check mark yet, but I appreciate that.
It's coming. It's coming, man.
Hopefully. I just got to keep doing hard work. You guys can follow me at Tomer Azarly. That's my name. It's TomerAzarly on Twitter and Instagram. Doing my work there, posting a couple articles. It's been a grind. We've had no basketball, no sports for 4 months now. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to this grind. It's been a blast, and I'm also looking forward to seeing some change. I know it's expected to be slow. I hope it isn't, but I'm looking forward to seeing some change in terms of racial equality as well. I really am, because it's gone on for a little for far too long, not just a little, far too long. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, appreciate that. How were you staying busy during this quarantine? Were you still writing articles? I know you were still posting, but how were you generally staying busy with Clutch Points during this time?
You know, I think about it now, and I have no idea what I was doing for 4 months at home. I was like, how the hell did I get through that? But no, it was a little bit of, you know, I would do some editing, some social media stuff on our side. So, you know, worked with our graphics department a bit. We got some great podcast guests as well. Worked on that. So it was just a mix of things to try to keep me busy. You know, Call of Duty was a good friend of mine during this hiatus. just played some video games as well, 2K. That's pretty much it. I mean, you know, didn't really see my friends for a while. We did a lot of FaceTiming, but You pretty much listed it, writing articles, doing some social media work, and, you know, just trying to stay in contact with the team just to see what's going on, because I think we went a good 3 months without hearing from them, and it was so long period of time.
Yeah, it was pretty – well, welcome back, and it is nice to stay busy. Now it seems like we're doing a lot more than we've done in the past with the – they're having a Zoom call every
right?
day now. A Zoom call
it
every day now.
It goes from nothing to something every single day.
Every single day, right. It's weird.
The 7 a.m. call time, though, is a little tough for me, I got to say, because I'm not an early person.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow, what is it, 7:30? I know it's 8:30. 8:30 tomorrow. I mean, that's so you get to sleep in an hour.
A little bit, yeah.
So, since they're not counting these last eight, what is it called, preseason games that your Doc Rivers is calling them, who would be your MVP for 2019, 2020 in the National Basketball Association?
So, my MVP is going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think LeBron made a good push towards the end of the year, but I think that there was a sheer dominance on offense and defense from start to finish of the year. Giannis Antetokounmpo was just on another level. LeBron was great, but I think that Giannis just left his mark on every single game on both ends of the floor. And I think it was really fun to watch. I don't think LeBron is that far behind, you know, but I think that Giannis has it sealed. He should have it sealed anyways.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. What's your thoughts, Mr. Cleveland?
You know, I'm going to call it a tie right now between Giannis and LeBron with the last eight games, you know, kind of how they come out, determining, you know, who ultimately will be the recipient of the MVP award. I think LeBron making that shift to kind of, you know, running the offense was pretty spectacular, and his chemistry and symmetry with Anthony Davis is, you know, impressive. So, but at the same time, Giannis just put that team on his back and carried into the best record in the East. So I think these last eight games will determine ultimately who the winner is. I think it's a dead heat right now.
Well, the last eight games won't count. It should be already decided right now. They're not taking the last eight games into effect. So you don't have these last couple of weeks to kind of figure it out, Mr. Cleveland.
I disagree. I think the last eight games will definitely determine it. I don't think they made a decision right this very second. Do you, Cam?
No,
I think they already have the trophy engraved as to who the winner
voting
is.
Voting is done this weekend.
Yeah, voting's already. Yeah, they're not taking the
voting's
last.
Done this weekend, and yeah, the regular season games won't even be played.
So if they're not taking these eight games into consideration, wow, I'll give a nod to Giannis.
Okay,
he's done a great job this year.
Okay. Oh, so gracious of you. rookie of the year. Who do you guys have for rookie of the year? Is that pretty much unanimous? That's Ja Morant, right?
Unanimous.
Yeah, I don't think it's close. I don't think anyone is even coming close. Yeah. I don't care how many games Zion has played. I don't even care if these eight games counted and Zion averaged like 30 a game, I still wouldn't give it to him. I think Ja Morant was incredible from start to finish.
Yeah, because he really didn't play half the season. But if these last eight games counted and he averaged 30 a game, I mean, there might be some vote changes.
I don't think so. I don't think. Did anyone have the Memphis Grizzlies as a playoff potential team?
No, you're absolutely right.
I think the Pelicans, people felt the Pelicans could squeeze in if healthy with everyone, with Zion, Ingram, you know, Lonzo, Drew Holiday. We thought they could squeeze in. I don't think anyone even had the Grizzlies as a top 10 team in the West.
Yeah, he kind of came out of nowhere, to be honest with you. Little thin frame, 6'1". I mean, just. He's been incredible this year. What about Defensive Player of the Year? And I think this is a two-man race.
I know that no one really gets the MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year award in the same year. It's got to be between Anthony Davis and Giannis. I think Anthony Davis has done enough to win the award. I know he's been a rock for them defensively, been able to guard down at the perimeter. I think Giannis has been really good, like I said, on both ends, especially on defense this year. I could see either of them winning it, honestly.
I think there's a stat. PER is offensive
the stat that he has. There are only three players that have the PER that Giannis has had. And defensive-wise, their defensive efficiency, now you know better than I would, but their defensive efficiency, the Bucks is off the charts. Where the Lakers are quite there. And then Anthony Davis has missed some games where Giannis hasn't. And right up until the end of the March or beginning of March when the season was shut down, the Lakers winning, that was a big weekend for all of these awards when the Lakers did beat the Clippers on Friday, didn't beat the Bucks on Sunday. That was a big weekend for all of these races. But I think it's Giannis to lose. How about you, Mr. Cleveland?
Anthony Davis will be the Defensive Player of the Year.
Okay, there's a lot of confidence there. Now, Coach of the Year, who you got as Coach of the Year?
Coach of the Year, I'm going to give it to Nick Nurse and Toronto Raptors. I think after losing Kawhi Leonard, I don't think anyone really had the Raptors being a top four seed, I don't think. They had a solid team. I don't think they expected to be, what are they? They're second seed right now.
Second seed,
they had a three-game lead on the Celtics. Yeah. They're really only 16 behind the Bucks. I'm not going to catch them, but did anyone really have that?
No.
Coach of the Year? I don't think so. And so I think Nick Nurse deserves a lot of credit for losing the Finals MVP and still coming up with a really, really good team.
Now, before I get to you, Cleveland, what does that say? And it's going to sound kind of crazy. Considering we've seen what Kawhi has meant to a basketball team and how good he can be, but what does that say about Kawhi that they take him away from the Bucks or taken away from the Raptors and they're still right there in the mix? Will next year, the year after, kind of tell a little bit more about that? Has Pascal Siakam been that great, or has Nick Nurse been that awesome to kind of fill in that void there? And I would give Nick Nurse is actually my vote for Coach of the Year as well for a lot of the reasons you said, and because you take Kawhi away. But does that say something about Kawhi? What do you think?
I don't think it says anything about Kawhi. I mean, if you look at the team they had last year, they had a very young Fred VanVleet. They had a very young Pascal Siakam. They had OG Anunoby, who was injured often and also very young. Terrence Davis, I don't think, was on that roster. If he was, he didn't play that much. So they really just had, Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet step up their games. We saw Norman Powell. He's averaging 16 points a game this year. So we've really seen everyone just elevate. It's just an opportunity thing where Kawhi leaves and now guys have to fill in. I don't think it says anything about Kawhi. I think it says more about the Raptors as a team, and Nick Nurse being able to bring everyone together and bring the best out of these players.
All right, good. Well said. What's your thoughts on that, Coach of the Year, Mr. Cleveland? Don't say
make it unanimous. Gonna have to see. You know what I'm saying? You're so hated. Cam, that you think you know what I'm going to say before I even say it. I didn't give you an opportunity.
Okay. I thought I heard it coming out of your mouth, man.
I'm going to make it unanimous. I believe it's Nick Nurse. And to your point, I think it's more about the elevation of Siakam's game than it is about the contributions of Kawhi Leonard last year. The negative impact of his departure. I think they took a big risk. Actually, I don't even think they took a big risk. I think they just said, we're going to, hand the reins over to you and we'll see what you can do. And I think this has far exceeded their expectation, how far he can carry that same game and intensity into the playoffs. Not sure, but the regular season has certainly been exciting. It's certainly been great for his development. And I think it's more about him raising the level of his game than the departure of Kawhi.
So how far do we think that Toronto can go in the playoffs? Can they get to the Eastern Conference Finals?
That's the magic question. We got to see. Because Kawhi was a different beast. He kept up his game. But look at the standings. They might face the Orlando Magic or the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. They faced the Magic last year, took care of them pretty easily. I don't see that being an issue this year. Yeah, I think the path to, to the Eastern Conference is doable. I mean, you got the Sixers, Pacers, Heat, and Celtics as possible opponents. Yeah, I could see it. I could see them going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I do.
Okay. Sixth Man of the Year. Now, Tomer, I'll have you know I broached this conversation probably about January to Mr. Cleveland.
Okay.
And I had Montrezl Harrell as a candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, and I got laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to laugh me off my own show. What's your thoughts of the Sixth Man of the Year? Who do you have winning this award?
I mean, I might just laugh too then, because I think it is Montrezl Harrell. I'll laugh right with you, Cam. I think it is Montrezl Harrell, because you look at the additions of Kawhi and CG. I believe Montrezl Harrell is averaging more points this year than he did last year, maybe around the same. He's averaging more points this year than he did last year. And that says a lot about the development and the uses that he's had this year. You look at, obviously, they've had to sacrifice as well, because Kawhi and PG are ball-dominant players. We've had other guys around, like Marcus Morris steps in, Reggie Jackson steps in, so... There's a lot of mouths to feed on that team. And Montrezl Harrell has been a stable, consistent source of offense and rebounding for the Clippers this year. When that second unit comes in, they don't really drop off. Sometimes when that second unit comes in, they're even better because the offense just flows much better against second units. So I think Montrezl Harrell is the Sixth Man of the Year. I will say that would be great if Lou Williams could win it, because I'd want to see him make history and get four most all time. I do think Dennis Schroeder deserves honorable mentions, because the Thunder have been balling out like crazy, and Schroeder has been a big part of that. But
mm-hmm.
I think that when you look at overall team success and sacrifice that they make, I think it's Montrezl Harrell.
Can they give it to? Can they split it and give Cole Sixth Man of the Year to two players on the same team? Be unheard of.
They can, but technically it's by voting. So first place gets like 5 points, second place gets 3 points,
gotcha.
And third place gets 1 point. So if they can, I guess all the media has to talk about that amongst themselves and make it like exactly the same amount for Lou and Trez to share it.
To share it, yeah, that'd be pretty bananas.
It's likely impossible, but it'd be fun to see.
Yeah. What's your thoughts, Mr. Cleveland?
You know, after listening to the two of you, you guys have converted me. You made me a believer. I believe Montrezl Harrell should win Sixth Man of the Year as well. Given the Clippers the Sixth Man of the Year this year and the Sixth Man of the Year from last year, to go along with Kawhi Leonard, the NBA Finals MVP from last year, as well as one of the top five shooting guards in the league with Paul George, making them the odds-on favorite to win the Western Conference Finals and quite possibly the championship. This might be the year for the LA Clippers to turn everything around.
Pull up your pants leg, Tamir. I wouldn't want you to step in this crop of shit he's throwing at us right now. Cleveland, come on.
God.
I'm just saying, Montrezl Harrell, yeah. Sixth Man of the Year this year. Contribution,
okay.
Like as we spoke before, inspirational leader. Gives him that emotional, lift in that, that presence, that, that personality that the Clippers, bench is bringing to the game.
In all honesty, I think he brings a hunger or energy, a passion that I don't know. I'm not going to say that this is – I'd be surprised if this was simply a contract year type of season that he's having. I think he plays with that force and that tenacity anyway. And he's putting – Doc knows how to use them, and he's using them appropriately. I think they're going to miss him in the playoffs. If they don't have him when the playoffs start, they're going to miss him big time.
I will just add real quick, though, that he is going against a lot of second unit guys start off, so he gets off to a good start. He's got a great guy who feeds him the ball, Lou Williams. But he's really developed into a great individual player. I don't know how much of that is system-based. I mean, if he leaves in free agency, we'll see. I'm not sure how well he can play on his own. It'll probably be good. Will he be this good or better? I'm not sure. But he's really developed into a great player.
You made a great point that they're using him appropriately when they bring him in. The other guys are kind of tired, or he's coming against the second string. So the numbers probably wouldn't be the same, but he'll be out there a lot more. He'll be getting some touches, and so the numbers will probably be right in line. But I think he's been really. They not only have they been using him well, he's played that part, that position. position pretty exceptionally all season long. Tamir, we kind of texted about it a couple weeks ago, and the way I wanted to phrase the snitch line or was I wanted to ask them, like, do they expect anybody on the team to use it, or would they use it against their opposition? And that's how kind of how I would have phrased it, not so much line, are you guys going to get online? And I think Miriam kind of asked the question, you know, kind of mildly and jokingly, and we were able to get a decent response from Harold. But that's how I was interested to know how if it would be used. What's the conversation around it? Like, do they even have a conversation about it?
I mean, Trez did, you know, he did take a bit of offense to it. Remember, he said, he's like, do I look like someone who would use a snitch hotline? But
right.
He wasn't totally cool with that, I don't think. But, look, I think when you ask a question like that, you have to be careful, like I said, because I think the players will automatically imply that you're asking them to name someone or address it as if you will. And I think it creates a bit of confusion. Personally, that's why I avoided it, because I don't think it's worth it. You know, they might go, oh, that's the guy who asked me that question. I'm not going to answer him again. That's why
right.
I avoided it. So.
Right. Okay. Your thoughts on that?
I think it is important. It is important. It's very important. Look, I mean, I think calling it a snitch hotline is a bit of, you know, it's got a negative term.
About
this, but,
yeah, certainly,
I mean,
certainly.
It sounds negative, but look, we're at a time when if this fire spreads, it's going to shut down the league. I just don't think you can risk that. NBA bubble is very strict. You know, media members had to quarantine for 10 straight days upon arrival. They couldn't even leave their room. You know, everyone's getting tested daily. You know, you can't leave the campus even to pick up DoorDash, where you got to quarantine for another 7 to 10 days.
Right.
I personally appreciate the seriousness that they're taking this, even though it's got the, you know, the negative snitch hotline name on it. I appreciate that it's being taken seriously, because you get one case in there, one case is enough to, you know, then you got to contact trace who may have been in contact with this guy, and that could just be a disaster. I think that the hotline is a good idea. I'm glad they're using it, honestly. Because there's no room for error, really. You have to be strict. You have to be on point with this, or else you're going to cause, you know, maybe the NBA to shut down again.
You can bring the whole league down. Yeah, so it's pretty good that they haven't had any positive cases in the past week, what, 7 or 8 days? So that's good on the league, and as you mentioned, they're probably doing something correctly. Are you applying to go? Are you planning to go for the playoffs? Have you considered it?
They only let, I believe it was 20 media members go in total for the start. I don't know if they'll let it open up later. I'm not sure about that. I will reach out, I guess. But, yeah, so right now only 20 people are there media-wise.
Did you send a very small group. Did you apply?
I did not, know, because I saw the big names that were on there, and I'm like, plus I think it was $55,000 for the entire trip.
It was 55 grand?
$55,000 for the entire trip.
Come on, man. Yeah, come on. You got that in your sink covers, man. Stop playing, man. You got that.
My financials? Who is this guy?
You got that. Hey, Tamir, thank you for making time to join us, man. Appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man out there. Stay safe, man. Hope you and your family are safe. And before you get out of here, let the people know again where they can find you on your social media.
Of course. First of all, thanks again for having me. I really appreciate you guys. I hope you guys are all staying safe. You know, being smart with this, you know, not taking risks, because it is a crazy time. You know, I was telling people on my podcast not to hoard toilet paper and to wear your mask. So I guess I'll say the same thing. But yeah, you guys can follow me at Tomer Azarly again. That's TomerAzarly. That's my name. Follow my work at Clutch Points. And, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this. Again, thank you guys for having me. I hope you guys are staying safe. And, yeah, that's all I got.
Thank you for your time, big guy. Take care, and we'll talk to you in the morning.
Pleasure talking, bro. See you in the morning. Thank you. See ya.
What's good, fans? Thank you guys for tuning in. Staying locked in, and we want to thank you again for Tomer Azarly joining us. Make sure you guys follow him. He is a good follow on Twitter.
Now we got some NFL conversation, Mr. Cleavon. NFL looking like they weren't really prepared for the start of a season. What's your thoughts on that real quick? Let's get into that because they're looking kind of shaky. Like they didn't really have a plan for the rookies. And we're here in the last week of July where training camps, you know, about to get ramped up. And they have no protocols in place. They really just kind of trying to play things by ear. What's your thoughts on that, on the way the NFL leadership has handled this beginning of the season?
A little shocking considering the nature of the NFL. I mean, it is the juggernaut of all sports in this country. So they've had plenty of time to kind of put protocols in place and kind of understand, you know, the gravity of the situation. So to be, you know, ill-prepared is a little surprising and a little unsettling, to be quite honest. I think that, again, I have not heard any type of initiative to expand rosters. I mean, I think it's not if, but when players are going to come down with the coronavirus, at least a few, in at least for, you know, 2 to 3 weeks before they can come back. And, you know, some teams might be hit even harder than that, you know, considering the way the virus operates. So until I hear more about what their plans are for that, I'm a little bit skeptical as to how this can, you know, kind of work.
Yeah, it's not a bubble. They can't put all 50, 60 players in a bubble with their 40 coaching staffs. They can't put everybody in a bubble and do that for 32 teams and have their season go off in you know, one spot like Orlando or Texas or even Washington or Toronto for that matter. So it's a lot different. There's going to be travel involved. There's going to be going to different cities. There's a lot involved with that. Now, the canceling out the preseason games, I think that just kind of makes things tougher. Not only do I think it makes it tougher for young players to kind of make the team, I think that makes it tougher for the game. That means the games are going to be that much more ugly, that uglier, that much, how do you say it? They're going to be ugly the first several games, the first month of the football. All September is going to be ugly football. If there's zero preseason games, obviously the rookies and the fourth and fifth string players are going to have a tough time making the squad. The coaches, how do they know what they got? How do they know what Joe Burrow can do if they haven't been able to play with them all off season? Now you get into, 3 weeks of the preseason, and he's not going against anybody. He's not able to scrimmage. He's not seeing live action until week one. I mean, come on. Week one in the NFL, that's going to be terrible football, the way this is looking. Yeah, for them to be unprepared, it's kind of surprising. But you know who's not batting an eyelash about this is Mr. Chase Young. He just inked his deal, 4 years, $34 million, 23 guaranteed, and all paid up front. So he signed the deal yesterday, and he's walking around with jewelry today, paid for. What's your thoughts about Chase Young and his impact on the team? I mean, the football team, that's about what we can call them right now. What's your thoughts on that? And what's your thoughts on his production? Again, Ron Rivera is not going to be able to – Ron Rivera, I did see, made a pretty good comparison, young Julius Peppers, but he can't even see him play. So how confident can he be?
In my opinion, Cam, worth every penny. One of the hallmark players of this draft. I think that he's playing a position that it's one that you don't need a whole lot of reps to kind of do your thing. And I think he's just going to be a presence of speed and power that unless you're that dude at left tackle, you're going to have a problem. And if you're not that dude, if you're just some dude, Chase Young is going to play with you. One of those guys, man. If you're, you know, I'm not saying you got to be jumping on, dude. I'm not saying you have to be, you know, one of the greatest to ever do it. But if you're just Steve Nelson, oh, man, yeah. You're going to have a problem all game long.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that works out for his team. The new team that is now calling themselves the Washington Football Team. How uncreative! Come on, man. As I mentioned earlier, that's what people have been calling them already. Is that the Football Team of Washington? And this is what you do. This is what you come up with. And they're just going to take off the old logo and just put the numbers on there. How uncreative is this? I don't know. I don't understand the resistance against this. We see teams have changed their jerseys, for God's sake. The Oklahoma City jersey, the Oklahoma City Thunder has, what, 6 different uniforms that they wear? I don't know what the resistance to this is. Okay, you want to save face and you say you're not going to change the name. Okay, but once you actually decide to change the name, I mean, you can change the name of the team and then have 4 new uniforms that come out. And sell them all. Like, right now you're not able to sell jerseys and uniforms because they've been the same uniforms for the past 50 years. Now you can change the uniforms and have a few different variations. You can have the colors ways. You can have the home jerseys, the away jerseys. You can have the home sideline jerseys, the away sideline jerseys. You can have 6 or 7 different uniform styles. What is this? What's going on with this idiot? Why is he resisting against this so much? And how difficult is it to say, okay, fans, here's a poll on Monday. You guys, here's 4 names, 4 different team names that we can use. We're going to everybody vote on it as a city. By the end of the week, we're going to make a determination. How difficult is that?
Like we say over and over again on this show, Cam, billionaires don't like to be told what to do. And when they are, they oftentimes respond in a very childish manner. He was told that he would lose sponsorship. He was told that he would lose potentially ownership. He was told that there would be a lot of consequences for not dropping the Redskins name. So rather than do the thing that you just aforementioned, he felt that he would pout and be an asshole about the whole thing and just say, okay, well, if you don't want me to call them the Redskins, well, I'll just call them Washington Football Team. Completely lacks vision, completely lacks imagination, and just shows how tone deaf some of these billionaire owners are with regards to what the country is trying to say. And that's what they're trying to convey, and he's just shown time and time again that he is not a part of that. He's not part of the solution. He's part of the problem. So, you know, changing it to Washington Football Team, that can't last infinitely, obviously. So hopefully there are some plans to kind of get something a little bit more, unique, colorful, and kind of goes along, you know, aligns with the rest of the league because just the, you know, team that plays in Washington is not cool.
I mean, that's dumb. That's dumb is what it is. It's not only not cool, it's dumb. Like, this is our squad? The Washington Football Team? What is this? This is Pop Warner? We're playing for
even Pop Warner teams have memes.
At Rainier, we were Rainier White and Rainier Green. I mean, that was back in the 70s. So, I mean, okay, we weren't really creative. With Rainier, you had white and green playing on two different sides of the field.
But by the time you was 12, you guys got names, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And this is the NFL franchise.
I mean, come on, man. This is.
I mean, I watched the Snoop Football League. Those guys got names. And you know what I'm saying? You can't come up with a name.
Come on, man. I just don't understand it. I just don't understand. You're going to make as far as income-wise and saving face, I think that is worth the value. It would have been worth the value 2 years ago. If you just came out and said, okay, in March, we're going to change the name of the team to it's going to be the Washington Unicorns. Okay, now they're going to come up with new jerseys. They're coming up with new logos. They're coming up with new hats, T-shirts, sweatpants, bras, T-shirts, underwear.
they're coming up with new uniforms. You're going to make money off of all that. So what you lose by saving, by holding steady and trying to save face, you're going to make up millions and millions and millions of dollars on new merchandise sales. I don't know what the struggle is, why you don't understand that. It's only because somebody tells you that you have to do this. If you did this 3 years ago, nobody had been telling you to do anything. It could have been your idea, and the world would have looked at you a lot different. Talking about the world looking at you a lot different. Woody Johnson, one of the heirs of Johnson & Johnson, has been one of Trump's cohorts, is now, should he be forced to step away from football operations for the biplanes? He was, because he took that ambassador role of, what was it, England. He wasn't heavily involved with football operations anyway. Should they just renounce him completely from football operations, considering the terms that he used, the language that he's been heard of using recently? What's your thoughts on Mr. Woody Johnson?
Theoretically and conceptually, maybe they should kind of think about doing that. However, realistically, the commissioner does not have that kind of power, and the other owners are not going to put that kind of pressure on him to relinquish ownership of the New York Jets.
But they did.
I mentioned, like we were talking about before, it's not the same type of partnership between ownership and the players. So what the players think and want and what society wants doesn't really have a big say. It's really just the other 31 owners in that room. And I don't think that they're progressive enough to say he should no longer have a team, given what he said.
They did the same. They did that with Richardson out of Carolina not too long ago.
They did, but there was a longer history and a little bit more flagrant of a comment with regards to what he said. So I think that, and even then, it was a little bit more. It took a long time to force Jerry Richardson out, and I don't think that this is going to be like, oh, you need to sell your team the next 3 months, given what we've been able to unturn during our investigation. I just don't think it's going to go that way.
Okay, and before we end the segment, what is your confidence the NFL will start on time? Is July 23, another week before the 30th, which means 4 weeks from the first, from Labor Day. Do we see football six weekends from now? It's Thursday, 6 weeks from today. Do we see football 6 weeks from today?
I give it 70-30 that they try it. Now, I believe that they're going to have to make major tweaks to it along the way, but I think there's a 70-30 chance that they at least try it. If training camp goes just absolutely horribly and the war of attrition just completely beats them down and they just simply don't have enough healthy bodies to even attempt such a thing, and that's unfortunately, a reality that may happen. So,
well,
I would say 70-30.
Well, I think last year at this time, there were some activities. Last year at this time, we were well aware what the schedule was going into the training camp and covering the Chargers and having information about what was coming. This year, we have nothing. This year, I got an email today that said they announced who their who's covering their games, who's telecasting their games, and it's in the Telemundo on Spanish TV. So that's all we got. We got no direction of when or where things will be happening. So it's it seems like we're a lot further off, but I remind you, it is July 23, so they have less than 1 week to kind of make some stuff happen. So we'll see how things transpire. Cleveland, when we come back, we're going to talk about more NFL topics. We're going to give you guys some information on this day in history, and we got a big fight is on the calendar. I want to know what you think about this fight that's on the calendar, and then we're going to talk about
the return of the Kraken and your thoughts on that. So let's take a break here.
Hey, fans. One, thank you guys for tuning into our Voice of the Fans podcast as you do each and every week. We appreciate the love. Please make sure to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about our show. Additionally, I'd like to ask that you guys subscribe to our Voice of the Fans YouTube page. Go to YouTube, type in Voice of the Fans, hit the subscribe button. What you're going to find there is a lot of exclusive content, interviews between Greg Popovich and myself, Scott Farrell, sports talk host, and myself. You're going to hear my conversation with Emmitt Smith. Hear why he tells me to go do some research. You're also going to see my interview with Jim Brown, legendary Jim Brown. You're going to see my interviews with Eric Dickerson. You're going to see my interview with Terrell Davis. Hear why Terrell Davis says that Broncos running system was not a system. Hear his explanation of that. Once again, Voice of the Fans on YouTube page. Check it out. Again, tell a friend to tell a friend because we appreciate that love. Thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, thank you for making our voice your choice.
What's good, fans? Thank you guys for tuning in to our podcast. Thank you guys for staying tuned in to our podcast, man. I enjoy doing this every week. Just give you guys some good football banter. Somebody once told me, man, we're going to do this every week. We're not going to take a break off. I said, man, there's content every week. There's good stuff to talk about every week that goes off. Back then it was more NFL-centric, but we had NFL, the NBA. Now we got boxing going on. We got team names. We got one team who can't come up with a name in the NFL. We got another team who comes up with a – at least they came up with a name. We'll see what everybody thinks about it here momentarily. But there's content, folks. There's content for us to come out. And so that guy who said, are you going to do this every week? Are we ever going to take a break? Why are we breaking? What are you breaking for? The fans want to hear you. The fans want to hear us. We got stuff to talk about in the fans. So let's talk about this fight coming up. We got Nate Robinson wanting to get in the ring. He says he wants all the smoke with YouTube fighter Jake Paul. Have you heard about this bet? Have you heard about this bout? And are you excited to see Nate Robinson get in the ring? Not only was he a football star at your alma mater, University of Washington, he made it to the league, coming from Rainier Beach, made it to the NBA, won a couple dunk contests. Now he's getting in the ring to show off his boxing skills. What do you think about this?
Well, no, make no mistake about it, Cam. Pound for pound, Nate Robinson is one of the strongest human beings on the planet. One of those guys that can bench twice his body weight numerous times, 44-inch vert. It's, you know, mighty now, basically. Not defense. He's not a boxer. I have no idea how well he can take a punch. And this is not a good idea for him. You're really, really strong, and you can lift a lot of weights, and you run really fast, you can jump really high. It does not make you a fighter. People find out very quickly, and I hope he just doesn't get hurt. He's my guy, 206.
Well, it'll be interesting to see kind of how this transpires. Cool guy, a happy-go-lucky kid. I mean, boxing, I mean, I don't know if you ever got in the ring, if you ever put on gloves. I don't know about you, but I did one time. One time, and we even had the headgear on. And it was cool when I threw a couple punches. It wasn't cool getting hit. And when I got hit, I took off the headgear, took off gloves, and said, no, this isn't for me. Give me a football helmet, and I'll go out on the field to where I see what's going on. I know what's going on. I know who I'm going after. It was interesting. But Nate Robinson, I'm excited to see it. It's going to be in Carson at the StubHub Center what is it called now? I don't even know what it's called. Home Depot Center is not the Home Depot Center. The Dignity Health Center is what it's called. The venue, I think you went to the venue with me. That's where the fight's going to be at. And there's another fight on that fight card. a couple guys that you may have heard of once before. Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. Did that whet your appetite a little bit?
You know, Cam, it is because of the time that we're in. Any kind of live sports sounds pretty cool. That isn't like pre-recorded from 1983. fresh new content. So from that perspective, yeah. Do I think this is going to be a good fight? Absolutely not. And just like the Nate Robinson fight, I just hope no one gets hurt. I think Mike Tyson is way too big for Roy Jones. Roy Jones, you know, probably still has incredibly fast hands in comparison to anyone Mike Tyson's ever seen, but he just doesn't hit hard enough. And what has Mike Tyson been doing the last, you know, 5 years? So, you know, I don't really think it's going to be a competitive fight. I think it's going to be really, really sloppy. I think both of them will get very, very tired very quickly. But a Mike Tyson right hand is still a Mike Tyson right hand. So,
I mean, so you don't think Roy can get land his 15 punches to Mike Tyson's one right hand?
I'm sure he can. But again, that ratio, it sounds really impressive. But, the one is just a little bit too much for the cumulative effect of the 15.
It's going to be an interesting fight. It's down the street from the house, so I got to be there. I got to cover it, man. I got to see what's going on. And I'll be sure to bring you guys all the smoke that they say they want. So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I wasn't excited to see Mike Tyson in the ring, but this is kind of what I fell into. I'm going to be excited to see Mike Tyson in the ring, and I love to see Roy Jones Jr., just hear him talk anytime. So the lead-up to the fight is going to be tremendous. But as you mentioned, there's going to be some challenging things to get in the fight. But they're both serious about it, so I doubt either one of them want to come in and embarrass themselves. So, and with that respect, I mean, two 50-year-olds going at it, one 54, and one's going to be 52 by the time they fight. We'll see how things go. What's your level? What's the level of excitement up there in Seattle about the Seattle Kraken? And they couldn't come up with a better name than a Kraken? Like, the Thunderbirds weren't available? The Sea Monsters wasn't good enough? I mean, what's going on? Did you guys vote?
Oh, man, I think there was a little bit of a, you know, kind of, you know, give us your opinion kind of thing. But, you know, I like the Kraken. You know, unleash the Kraken. Welcome to the Crack House.
Welcome,
you know,
to the Crack House, and all you crackheads is going to be wearing Kraken jerseys, huh?
And the jerseys, make no mistake about it, ooh, they are clean.
The jerseys are fire.
Those jerseys are clean.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to be flying off the shelves. I might have to give me one. The sweaters, I might have to give me a sweater.
I'm sure you will. Yeah. People will be like, ooh, what's that? Oh, it's the Kraken.
Well, it's
cracking,
huh? It's the Seattle hockey team is what I refer to them.
Cracking, huh? You like your energy.
I mean.
Lots of fan words with it, man. I think it's going to be a good thing.
Okay. All right. We'll see how you crackheads do with it. Is it safe, Mr. Cleveland, to start scheduling your fantasy football draft?
I want to do it, Cam. You got to do it, Cam. But no, it's not safe. You have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. It's a complete crap too. Like never before, man.
So we're going to sit around the house for 2 or 3 hours, have some beers, and argue about whose team is the best. And we may not even get to see them. We may not even get to see them in action. That's what we're doing.
May not get to see him. The player you draft may have a team decimated by COVID, may end up with it themselves. I mean, there's just a lot of other, you know, exterior factors that go into it. I mean, injury in and of itself was already, you know, quite a thing. And now you're showing all these other factors. It's like, okay, well, I don't know if you can even say, you know, you just have to be a better expert about it, because even if you go to your backup plan or your, you know.
So you do you draft four quarterbacks?
Agency.
Do you draft four quarterbacks? I mean, do you just – you talk about – you mentioned why the NFL hasn't announced that you're going to a bigger roster. I mean, or should we just increase the rosters of the fantasy football teams just for COVID reasons?
You know, I haven't come up with a, you know, an ulterior strategy to kind of be more successful and give myself an advantage. I don't think drafting four quarterbacks would be smart. I think you just have to kind of roll with the dice and then, you know, just try and be, you know, it's going to be a lot of luck, a lot more luck than skill involved, because I think that, you know, the virus in and of itself is going to be a major factor.
Oh, kind of how you got by the season last year, huh?
Oh, no, I got to the semifinal. I know you didn't make the playoffs, so you're just kind of on the outside looking in. But, no, I got to the semis.
With the luck that you speak about.
Thanks for asking. Thanks for reminding the fans.
Are you confidence level in the baseball season? It started tonight. Are you any? What is your confidence level in the baseball season finishing, or the baseball finishing their season this year?
I got a pretty high confidence level of the baseball season finishing this year. For one, don't have the same issue that the NFL has, in which they have, you know, minor league players they can always just bring up. So that makes the war of attrition much easier to win. And again, it's baseball, so players aren't really like all up on top of one another. So, you know, it's almost social distancing in and of itself is the way a baseball time is. An outfield is spread out. So, I mean, you know, the chances of, you know, contracting it are much, you know, much less. So, yeah, I feel confident they can get through a 60-game season, yeah.
Okay, okay. So, Cleveland, this week we reviewed all of NFC. We will review the AFC South this week. And the fans will be interested to hear how you have the Colts number one in the division this year. All the talk you had about Ryan Tannehill last season, all the talk you had about him going into the offseason and during the offseason, and you have a Phillip Rivers-led Colts team beating Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry out for the number one spot in the AFC South?
I do, Cam. And as you well know, the NFL is all about adjustments. I think that the NFL will make the proper adjustments to kind of, you know, counteract what the Titans did effectively. I think they'll have a little bit of a letdown. I don't think they'll be sneaking up on people like they were last year. You know, I think you have to remember in the last 10 games or so, you know, they were showing something new that the league hadn't seen. You know, Ryan Tannehill-led team as opposed to a Marcus Mariota-led team. So, you know, they weren't really quick to make those adjustments, and then, you know, Derrick Henry turned into a battering ram. You know, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. I think this may be one of those years where, you know, you might be expecting 1,600, but, you know, more like 1,300. And with that, you know, that balance not being there, maybe they go 8-8, 9-7.
Wow. 8-8, 9-7. You still have the Texans behind them and the Jaguars behind them. Clearly, I understand the Jaguars, but I have the Titans again. I just don't. I'm not confident in the Phillip Rivers-led Colts, although they do have a better running game, a better offensive line than they had in L.A. with the Chargers last year. I just think when it came down, I saw it enough times last season. When it came down to it, Phillip Rivers gives it up. And so I'm not counting on him winning the division. Though Ryan Tannehill kind of, Phillip Rivers at least was a has-been. Ryan Tannehill never was. But the batting ram of Derrick Henry, like, that's something. Derrick Henry is not getting smaller. He's not getting slower. He's not, the defenders haven't grown that much. He's big as most offensive linemen. So with that being said, that force is still going to be there. And so if he doesn't gain 1,600 yards, he gains 1,450. And then still enough play action for Ryan Tannehill to be effective. So I expect the Titans not to go 13-3, but more like 11-5 and win that division still.
We shall see.
Yeah, we shall see. And so speaking of that division, the AFC, keep in mind this is all AFC South numbers that I want to discuss with you. I want to educate the fans on in this division. And this is Stump Cleveland's segment. Which team of the AFC South has the best playoff winning percentage?
Cam, that's the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You're pretty quick on the draw there. What makes you say the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Because they haven't been to the playoffs as many times, and when they do, they usually progress past the first round.
Oh, so you're really just guessing that this one. But that was a pretty good guess, Mr. Cleveland. The Jacksonville Jaguars does have the best playoff winning percentage of any team, the Texans, Titans, the Colts.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
The Colts are at 48%. Jacksonville's at 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Which running back, just in the division, has gained the most yards?
In the history of the division?
In the history of the division. And we're just talking these teams. So we know the Colts moved there not too long ago. So we're just counting all, every team in the division as they are now. Which running back has gained the most yards in the history of this division? That would be, again, the Tennessee Titans, the Houston Texans, Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Indianapolis Colts.
AFC South haven't been together that long. So I'm going to say Arian Foster.
Arian Foster, wow. Okay, well, he'd be last in that list. Arian Foster would be last.
Okay. Maybe the division's been together a little bit longer than I think, so. I'm going to go with Edgerrin James.
Edgerrin James would be next to last in that.
What?
I was surprised by that, actually. I was surprised by that. I'll tell you what my logic was going into this, but I was surprised by that when I actually looked that up.
Okay. So wait. Fred Taylor.
There you go. Fred Taylor is number one. So it only took you a few shots to get there. Yeah. Arian Foster had 6,400 yards. Edgerrin James had 9,226 yards. I thought he had more than that. Eddie George had 10,000 yards rushing in his career with Houston and now Tennessee. Which receiver has the most receiving yards?
Marvin Harrison.
Say it so confidently, and that's right. I was trying to. The Colts' numbers really, in most categories, and that's why you notice I left quarterback out of here. Most numbers, the Colts. The Colts is going to win in most categories here, from wins to playoff wins to winning percentage. The Colts had essentially dominated this division in every category. But with Marvin, so you said Marvin Harrison, which is accurate, which is correct. However, can you name the second and third receiver with the most yards in this division? The receivers with the second and third most yards in this division.
I'm gonna come from left field, Cam.
I bet you can name one of these guys. I don't know if you're gonna get the other guy.
Come from left field. I'm gonna say Kenny McArdle and Andre Johnson.
Okay, you named the one I thought you could name, but there was a kid who played on the other side of Kenny McArdle who was better than him. He played
It is. I don't know if he's better than Kenny, but Jimmy Smith was amazing.
If you remember, Kent McArdle, where'd he go for the money? He went somewhere else to get paid. And work out when you leave a good system. It doesn't quite work out for you. Jimmy Smith was there before McArdle and thereafter, even though he drank more and probably did a little bit more stuff off the field than Kenny McArdle. Andre Johnson, that's what I assumed you would pick. So when you spurred out Marvin Harrison, he was less than 100 yards ahead of Andre Johnson. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, if you know how close that number was.
I did not realize.
Less than 100 yards ahead of him, but ahead is ahead. And this is 150 yards. Behind him was Jimmy Smith at 12,287 yards. Andrew Johnson had 13,500 yards. And I was surprised by this. Can you guess who leads the Tennessee Titans, the Houston Oilers in receiving? That franchise, can you guess who leads that franchise in receiving?
I'm going to say
he was a Houston Oiler, so that should help you.
I'm gonna say Ernest Givens.
It is Ernest Givens at under 8,000 yards, 8,000 yards for his career. I remember they were bombed away there for a couple of years.
They were. They were running the Miles Davis run and shoot.
Run and shoot. All he got was 8,000 yards out of that? I know it was only for a few years that he had Warren Moon. It was two or three that they had Warren Moon, but sheesh. Ernest Givens, 8,000 yards. So surprise, surprise. So there you go, some history from the AFC South. Cleveland didn't get the number. Who had the most, the better playoff percentage? We had to help him with the running back yardage, and the receivers, he's able to identify that pretty quickly. So good work out of you, Cleveland. Again, more education for you fans. There's a lot of homework. I'm going to leave you with this quote tonight. You are responsible for how people remember you or don't. So don't take it lightly. Once again, you are responsible of how people remember you or don't. So don't take that lightly. And that's from the late, great Mr. Kobe Bryant. Fans, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, Mr. Cleveland, thank you for your participation, sir. And we look forward to talking to you in the near future, my man.
My pleasure, bro. We'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon. Fans, thank you guys for your time. And as always, thank you for making our voice your choice. Have a good one, Cleveland.
Take it easy, bro.
Later.
Thanks for making our voice your choice.